We do have quite a lot of the silk scarves framed in the studio, which we've put on Instagram, and people have gone, oh, that's such a great idea, I'm going to do that. So we do definitely recommend if people want to frame the scarves.
Welcome to House Guest with me, Carol Annett, interiors editor at Country and Townhouse magazine. Here I chat to those clever creatives behind the houses, hotels and brands you see in glossy magazines like ours. Guests including interior designers and architects, as well as celebrities dipping their toe into the world of decorating.
My house guest today is Sabina Savage, who weaves fantastical stories into her designs for exquisite scarves, cushions, and clothing. Morning, Sabina. Nice to see you.
Morning. Lovely to see you, Carol.
Now, you have, I wanted to talk to you about the brand, but also how you have managed to create a really successful, beautiful brand, but it's very high end, it's luxury in today's climate. So tell us a little bit about, so you've been going for 8 years now. Describe the products. I mean, for me, they are absolutely works of art on beautiful silk squares. You know, when if you imagine how Hermes is the one that springs to mind. I mean, yours are so detailed. The drawings are absolutely amazing. And then after the silk scarves, you then went on to create clothing and a few accessories and that sort of thing. So tell us a little bit about your background and how Sabina Savage came about.
I mean, it feels like a story that starts from day dot, essentially. I'm the classic cliche of the person that always knew they wanted to be a fashion designer. And I know everyone says it, but it's like all my pictures that I drew when I was younger, ladies in dresses, but also lots and lots of animals. And I had all those books of how to draw a horse in proportion, where you draw all the different ovals and squares and then you add it all together and it makes like the perfect horse. And I always loved drawing, but I particularly always loved fashion. And the whole way through school, all of the subjects I chose to study were all kind of already geared towards the fact that I wanted to be a fashion designer. So I made all of my selections for GCSEs and A-levels and everything already with this in mind. And then I went to study in Paris. I went to the oldest fashion school in the world, which is called ESMOD, and I studied couture. And at the time, I had no idea I wanted anything to do with print. I'd never done print. I'd never had a particular interest in print, strangely. But I graduated and we had to do a 6-month internship to complete the course. And the only place I'd ever wanted to go was McQueen. And the only internship they had available at the time was in print. So I just went for it and got it. And just the second I started drawing, because they used to draw all the prints by hand, they sat me down with a pencil and this enormous kind of life-size body template and just said, okay, just draw directly onto the template. And then they created it into a placement print then, according to where I'd drawn kind of the placement of everything. And I just loved it. And while I was there, I also did scarves and I stayed for, God, months and months. I just didn't want to leave. I just was like, no, keep using me. I'll come on my weekends. I just absolutely...
Was Alexander McQueen alive then?
No, he was there when I was interviewed, but I started after he died, which was a really horrible time to start, to be honest, because it was just so sad. And also, obviously, in a selfish way for me, it was really strange because I'd been so excited about working with him. And then it just felt horrible and weird for everybody, I think, at the time.
And I suppose also the tragic way in which he died, sort of taking his own life, that's, you know, that was such an incredible creative skill just kind of snuffed out.
Yeah, it really was. And it just kind of, he had always been such an inspiration for me the whole way through, like really from the first time I was aware of fashion at all. It was McQueen all the way. It was the theatre. And I mean, storytelling is such a big part of what I do. And I feel like he was the ultimate storyteller because all his shows were almost like a theatre performance. And there was a beginning, middle and end to every show. It told a story the whole way through the collection. So yeah, just my biggest inspiration, basically. So it was, yeah, really weird and sad.
So after that, did you start the business sort of more or less after that, knowing that you wanted to, I mean, presumably they were saying to you, wow, this, these drawings are beautiful, fantastic. Were you doing kind of animals then?
No, I wasn't doing animals, but to be honest, everybody in the print department at McQueen are, in my opinion, probably the most talented people in the industry. So it's just, you're just surrounded by the ultimate creativity, and not just the print team, like everyone there. So I didn't necessarily think I had anything to offer that all the other people there didn't. But when I left, I moved home to my parents' house to kind of assess. They live in Somerset in the countryside, to assess what I wanted to do, really, and what my next step was going to be. And I always knew I wanted my own brand, but I didn't think I wanted it that early. I was still only 21, 22 maybe. And it felt too soon. But my parents just said, why don't you just draw a couple of pictures and get them printed and see what happens. So I did that, and I went and got a tiny bank loan, like minuscule bank loan, and printed my first collection and essentially sold them to my mum's friends and made enough to print my next collection. And then it just built from there. So it's been a completely organic growth. And I would like to keep it that way if I can, because I'm a massive control freak and I don't want anyone else to tell me what to do.
I think it's worth pointing out that your drawings take you between 4 and 6 weeks to complete. I mean, the detail is extraordinary.
Yeah.
And what was the first collection? Because you have some, I love the stories. You've got the pelicans and the sea under your Panchatantra. What is Panchatantra? Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, Panchatantra is the most recent collection. It's our spring summer 22. And it's the Panchatantra is a book, and it's basically the original Aesop's fables. So it's an Indian, ancient Indian book, which is full of all these moralistic tales about animals. So the pelicans and the sea, for example, is based on a Panchatantra story called The Bird Pair and the Sea. And they're these kind of very short, sometimes quite absurd stories, but they all have quite like a moral grounding, and I just loved them, so I interpreted them for the new collection.
I have to say, there are a lot of they're not, I wouldn't call the designs they're not sort of pretty and kind of lovey-dovey animal. I mean, these are leopards killing birds. I mean, they really are quite, there's a lot in there. I'm trying to think of the right word, really. They're probably slightly unexpected. Yeah, savage. They're savage. Yeah. That's exactly.
It's a stage name, and it's not. It is my real name.
Yeah. Because there is definitely a side of you that lives up to your name.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily intentional, though. I think it's just how they come out from me somehow. But I think there is this slightly dark undertone, which actually some people don't necessarily like. They'll go through all the designs until they find one that's got the least darkness in it, and then they buy that one. But other people love the slightly dark element. But yeah, it's not intentional. I don't really think about it. It's just the way they are.
And also, the designs absolutely fill the whole of the scarf. I mean, there's no kind of big blocks of colour. This is absolutely intricate work on every single centimetre. So what, can you remember what your first collection was?
Yes, I drew, it was called Savage Kingdom, actually, which is what the company name is now. So the brand is Savage, but my company is called Savage Kingdom because of this first collection. And it was a story, it was based in India, like the most recent one, actually. And it was just a story of a palace in India that had fallen, and the animals have taken it over, and they found all the jewels and the riches, and they've kind of adorned themselves. So there was a monkey, which some people loved and some people said was a really terrifying monkey. But it was wearing this kind of amazing prince's embroidered waistcoat. And there was a leopard with a skull, but she was wearing this beautiful Indian headdress, and a peacock. Yeah. So weirdly, I've come full circle back to the Indian collection again.
And is it mostly through books that you do your research?
Oh, it comes from all over. I visit museums as much as I can. I particularly love the Met in New York, because every time I go, I find something completely different, or I find a different part of the museum that I hadn't found. And I also absolutely love the V&A. I just think we're so lucky to have the V&A in London. So I do a lot of museum trips when I'm researching, and then book like massively on books. So for every collection, I'm buying like 10 big, huge research books. So I read a lot. Once I start on a new theme, I'm reading and reading and reading. And actually in the designs, pretty much every single detail and element is there for a reason and has a place in the story. And I don't often get to kind of really go through every design and point out all the things, but I know that to me, like every placement of a jewel or there's a bell there, and it's all come from somewhere within all this research that I do. When I write the collection story, it has to be so short because otherwise no one's going to read pages and pages of it. But actually everything is incredibly well researched, and I hope that I'm doing all the references justice. It's quite important to me that it's all very authentic.
And do you always have the same amount of scarves or stories, if you like, per collection?
Yes. So it's always three designs per collection, because quite honestly, I just don't have time to draw any more than that. Mm-hmm. So I when I write the story, I illustrate it then in three panels. I kind of break down all my research into three sections. And then each one has two colorways, so you end up with six options per collection. And then we print them on different fabrics in different sizes. And then I take those prints and I do the placement print for the clothing, so I can take elements of each scarf. So they're all drawn as a scarf. And then I take elements of the scarf prints and arrange them as placement print on the clothing.
And when you say placement print, that's simply so that for example, if it's a shirt, the two sides will match up.
Exactly. So I essentially get the patterns for the clothing. So you take like the sleeve of a shirt, for example, laid out flat, and I get them digitized so I can have them on my computer screen. And then I can place the bits of print exactly where I want it to lie on the sleeve, so that on the cuff, for example, if I want a butterfly sitting exactly on the front of the cuff, I can place it there. So when our seamstresses then come to cut the fabric, they know exactly where to place that cuff piece to cut it. So everything has to be completely cut by hand individually, whereas most garments are kind of, they layer the fabric up and then cut, I don't know, 10 or 20 pieces at once. Ours is literally cut by hand with a pair of scissors, so that everything sits exactly where it's supposed to sit on the garment.
I guess that's your sort of couture background, really, is coming into play.
Yeah. And also just the fact that my very first taste of print was at McQueen, and it was how they did it. So to me, that's how it's done. I've just never worked with kind of a roll of block printed fabric. It's just never how I've learned how to do print. So I think, I mean, my only education in print was my time at McQueen, and that's what I've taken from it, I guess.
And so your illustrations are scanned, and then the colouring process, is that you sitting down with coloured pencils or a paint box? How does it work?
So it's done so that I can do multiple colourways. I have one of those huge screens that you can draw directly onto.
Okay.
So it's digital colour, but it's done by hand by me, if you see what I mean. It's kind of a cross between the two. So I am colouring it in essentially myself manually, but it's a digital colour so that I can then change the background or kind of change the colourways once I've coloured it in.
And when it comes to colour, where do you get your inspirations for that? I mean, certainly my favourites are the deep, rich, you know, kind of jewel tones.
Yeah. So when I start the collection, I make a mood board, which sits above my desk the whole time I'm drawing. So I'll have a huge bank of images, but I'll pick kind of the key reference points and have them printed out on a mood board over my desk. And that also provides the colour palette. So when I come to colour them in, I'm referencing directly from the mood board. So the theme ties the colour palette in as well as part of the story. So it all comes from there.
And where are you selling at the moment?
So in London, we're in Fortnum & Mason, which is very exciting. So they're our kind of London flagship. And they've just done a big 2-month pop-up, where they've had all our clothing and everything. We had a kind of a shop within Fortnum & Mason for the last 2 months, which has been great. But then we're also all around the world. So the US is our biggest market. We sell about 80% of our goods to the US. So we're in Bergdorf Goodman in New York. And then we've got about between 60 and 80 other stores across the US that carry our line.
That's so exciting, isn't it? Do you sometimes kind of look back and think, crikey, starting out with a, you know, with just a very strong idea of your kind of the creativity of then, but also creating such a successful high-end luxury brand over really what has been quite a, you know, difficult last few years?
Yeah, I don't get a huge amount of time to stand back and look at it, to be honest. But it has, because everyone thinks like that COVID years were the time to sit back and reflect. But actually, because there was so much adapting to be done and constantly pivoting and changing, and can we do this trip to New York? No, we can't. What are we going to do instead? Actually, there was still no time to sit back and kind of look at the bigger picture. So I think I probably need to do that more. But because we're always just constantly thinking of what's the next thing, what's the next thing, you don't ever really look back. You're constantly looking forward. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to say? I want to see is lampshades.
Oh, I think homeware is probably another area I would love to branch into.
Yeah.
And I keep getting requests for wallpaper as well. And also just, we've done a few cushions, but I feel like I haven't had time to put the energy I would like to put into doing things for the home as well. So maybe lampshades will be on the horizon.
And what about, can you buy the illustrations? Do you sell the illustrations?
Currently, no. We do have quite a lot of the silk scarves framed in the studio, which we've put on Instagram, and people have gone, oh, that's such a great idea. I'm going to do that. So we do, I mean, definitely recommend if people want to frame the scarves. But at the moment, the drawings are so precious to me, the original drawings, that at the moment I just haven't. People keep asking for prints as well. And I just think as soon as you make a print of something, it's no longer the only one. And at the moment, I'm just keeping the drawings selfishly for myself. But maybe one day I'm going to do something with them.
Yeah.
Because I think every time I do an event and take the drawings anywhere, that's the thing that people are really, they really want to see them. Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm just quite extraordinary. And tell me about, I'd love to know about the No Playbook, because one of the stories or one of the designs is called the Cunning Kitsune. Yes. Am I saying it right? I've no idea what a kitsune is.
Oh, it's a nine-tailed fox. It's a Japanese mythological creature, which is a nine-tailed fox. So the No Playbook was based on Japanese No theatre. So it's N-O-H, No. And there are only 12 plays in existence. I did that collection for Spring Summer 19. And the story that I wrote, I did lots of research into this ancient type of theatre, and there's a very specific type of wooden building which No theatre is performed in, and it's a kind of quite a small wooden, traditional wooden stage, and there are only these 12 plays. So it's like a really ancient form of theatre, and the story that I wrote was that there's this old No stage theatre building up on a mountain on the side of Kyoto. And it's falling down, and all the locals think it's a bit of an eyesore, and they're going to knock it down. And the hare with his big ears overhears them saying this, and he runs back up the mountain to tell all the animals, because they've moved into it and used it as their home. So they start panicking and thinking, well, what are we going to do? They're going to come and knock it down. And they find in the back room a chest of all the costumes from the No Theatre. So they all get dressed up and they find the playbook with all the plays in it. And when the locals come up to knock the theatre down, the animals put on this performance of the plays. And so the fox dresses up as the kitsune with the nine tails. And they all think it's inhabited by these benevolent spirits that are looking after Kyoto. So they go back down the mountain and they leave it alone. They don't knock it down. So that was the story of that one. So again, the three designs are based on three of the Japanese no plays. So they've all got different details to do with the stories in those plays.
Absolutely lovely. And if you want to see the pictures, then go online to Sabina's website. Is it just sabinasavage.com?
.com, yeah.
Yeah. sabinasavage.com. And if you are anywhere near Fortnum and Mason, I do urge you to go and have a look at the pieces in real life, because they are just absolutely extraordinary. So the studio, you're based in Hackney, and where do you print?
All our products are now made in the UK. So we used to print in Italy, and all our clothing has always been made in London. And we just decided that it would be really nice to bring all the production back home. Also, just because it's easier to keep every time we go and visit. And I like to have quite a hands-on approach to the production process, just to check quality and colours. And every time I have to go and do colour references with everything, it's just really nice to have it all close to home now.
And presumably that's quite a big selling point for the American market, is that it's designed and made in the UK.
I think so. And also just because our actual logo says Sabina Savage England. So it does make sense if it's all a very British product. Mm. Everyone always tells me the designs look very specifically British somehow as well. So it just feels like it ties everything together quite nicely. Yeah. And all our packaging and everything is all made in the UK as well. So we really are a British brand these days.
Well, a great British brand as well.
Great British brand.
Our country and town has great British brands. Thanks, Sabina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me. If you'd like to have more interiors inspiration, take a look at countryandtownhouse.co.uk, where you can also sign up to our monthly online interiors newsletter. And if you're flying anywhere soon, you can also listen on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment.